directly served by it, but their communities as a whole. Please take a listen for our full conversation.
So the thing about us at this clinic is that it's unique in that we're targeting a not just one particular vulnerable population, but a group of vulnerable parts of the community that often fall through the gaps, right? And there's a lot of cracks in our healthcare system, and the folks that are the most vulnerable shouldn't be allowed to fall through. And in fact, we need to build a safety net that catches them. And this is our attempt here in Burnaby to do so. The other thing that this does also is this clinic will coordinate with other family practice clinics as well. So if we have family physicians and nurse practitioners that are practicing in their own practices in Burnaby, if we have patients that fit into these populations and we need support, say, from somebody from a language perspective or a cultural perspective, then we can access that. Or if, say, one of my new young moms is having difficulty breastfeeding her baby, I will have access to a lactation consultant at this clinic so I can refer there. So it's building extra resources for our community, as well as making sure that the vulnerable folks are also looked after.
One thing I wanted to ask was because, you know, looking into the breadth of services that are being provided at this specific clinic, I think a lot of times when people hear clinic, they don't associate it with all of these different services being provided. So just to confirm, all of these are being provided specifically within the clinic center.
So, yes, and there's a little bit more to the story.
Okay.
Right? Our primary care network, we've been quite innovative in trying to develop extra resources for the community of Burnaby. And so we've got this clinic, and then across the... So we've tried to develop what we call a campus of care, right? And so much like SFU has your campus, you have multiple buildings up there. Not everything's all in one building. And in Edmonds, we have tried to develop a campus of care around the corner of Edmonds and Kingsway, right? And so this clinic is on one side of the street. Across the hallway in the same building, we have a whole bunch of allied health staff that work with Fraser Health to support the rest of all of us. And then across the street from this clinic, we have Prime Care Medical Center that has 14 family doctors there that are all housed together. And we also have the Edmonds Urgent Care Center in that same building. And we also have two other clinics, one that serves new immigrants in a clinic called Global Family Care Clinic, as well as the New Canadian Clinic, which is serving folks that are government-sponsored refugees. So we really wanted to make it as inclusive as possible. It's not all in one clinic. It's in that shared one or two blocks. So access to each other for support. If the physicians need to support each other, we are able to do so. If the nurses need to come together with the team, we have access to them. So we can do a lot more than just the regular medical clinic.
Yeah, I mean, the way you're describing it, you know, the purpose of the clinic is to serve the community, but there's also what seems to be a community of people within the network serving people as well.
Yeah, so we have an extended team. And most folks are, you know, used to going to a family doctor and seeing that doctor, maybe a partnering doctor and an office secretary and maybe a nurse. Well, we've taken that concept and just grown it a little bit more, added a few team members to make sure that the care that we deliver is a lot more wholesome, and we're able to meet all of the needs for each patient and their family. And so this clinic and the clinic across the street are open from 8 till 5 in the daytime. And then the urgent care center will pick up from 5 p.m. till 9 p.m. And so they're open to make sure that folks, if they need urgent care, if you're making your dinner tonight, you happen to cut your finger, you need some stitches, well, you don't have to go wait in emergency for about 8 hours before you get stitches. You can call the urgent care center and we'll try to figure out how we can fit you in within the next hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so then, and we all collaborate with each other. We make sure that if one office is closed, the other office is open to pick up where they can. And then we p make sure that we pass all the information about the care provided back to the physician that's providing the longitudinal care. And it's important that all of us understand that each one of us as an individual person, we should have access to a family physician that provides longitudinal care, but we also need to have access for urgent episodic care needs as well. We all get injured, we get sick, your kids get sick, and the family physicians can't, one family physician can't be available 24/7, but a team of care providers can.
Another thing you had touched on is the language aspect. You know, a lot of the people visiting this clinic, English isn't going to be their first language, and especially, you know, people who are newly arriving, they may be much more comfortable speaking a different language. How have you gone about the process of ensuring that no matter where someone comes from, they'll be able to be assisted regardless of which language they are most comfortable with?
So in Burnaby, we have, I think the last assessment that we did was that there was anywhere between 135 to 150 different languages being spoken. And our unique partnership with Fraser Health, the physician partnership with Fraser Health and all of the community service organizations, we're able to provide access to interpreters and translators for all of them. And so I need to know if you're coming to see me, what language you wish to speak in, and my staff will make sure that there's somebody available to interpret for you. And that interpretation could be over the phone, it could be in person, it could be over video. And we'll just make sure that you're comfortable accessing the care that you need. And also the partnership with all of our community service agencies also helps facilitate translation, not just from a language perspective, but also from a cultural perspective as well. So everybody can feel safe that they're getting the best care possible, which is appropriate for them from whichever background they come from.
Now, one thing that I've seen is, you know, one reason for the Mosaic or community clinic being opened where it was is because of the demand and also just the sheer diversity of Burnaby. Do you think this is something that could or should be implemented within other care networks throughout the Lower Mainland?
So what we were hoping to do is we wanted to be able to show ourselves and the government that there are certain needs that are not being met. And if we provide the appropriate supports for these type of community clinics open, then we can better meet the needs of the public in a more wholesome way, and therefore drive down the cost of care to the system. So, and also less demand on the emergency rooms, as well as also making sure that the patient outcomes, long-term outcomes, are much better. Overall, in the long term, I think it's better for all of us as individuals, and from a community perspective, to have healthier individuals that get access to the care when they need it. In the space where they feel comfortable and they get access to care that's culturally appropriate, which is not going to lead them down some other pathway to other problems. Yeah, it's a win-win for everybody. And ideally, if we had enough funding, I would like to see this idea spread throughout BC.
Yeah, one thing that you're mentioning there that I think is really important to stress is the idea that even though this clinic is tailored towards a subset of the population, the benefits of it are widespread.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because the person accessing the right care at the right time in the right place enables better care delivery to other folks that might need that emergency care. So we don't want to be plugging up the emergency room. We don't want to be plugging up the acute care services. And actually, it may be more risky for the patient to go into a crowded waiting room in the ER where everyone's coughing. You might catch something there, right? And so it's better to do it this way where they're comfortable and it's done in a timely manner. You're not too stressed about accessing the care. And you build relationships that allow us to then coach patients to maximize their health. If we can pass the message on to folks, is if they want information about the Burnaby's Primary Care Network, just go to the Burnaby PCN's website. It's burnabypcn.ca, and you'll have access to a whole host of information about the kind of services that we can deliver together. And also, if there's new developments coming on, folks will have an opportunity to access the information there.
Once again, that was our interview with Dr. Baldev Sangera, the medical director of the Prime Care Medical Center and the Edmonds Urgent Care Center, as well as one of the leading physicians involved with the Mosaic Community Clinic that opened earlier this month. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is ACHLY and CVOX News Update.
I think it's really valuable for the community to be able to have a project that's in the Comox Valley recognized at a national level. I think it'll really give other local governments from small communities to ideas and inspiration to be able to tackle their own projects.
The Comox Valley Regional District, or CVRD, received a Sustainable Communities Award this week for climate adaptation from the Federation of Canadian Municipalities Green Municipal Fund. The award was given on Tuesday, February 11th at the Sustainable Communities Conference in Fredericton, New Brunswick. The CVRD did not attend and will receive the award in the mail. The award recognizes work done on the Dyke Road Park Project, a collaborative effort between the CVRD and many partners, including Comox First Nation, Project Watershed, Union of BC Municipalities, Stewardship Centre for BC, Nature Trust of BC, Real Estate Foundation of BC, Aquatic Ecosystems Restoration Fund, Guardians of Mid-Island Estuaries, and Pacific Salmon Foundation. The collaborative project is being recognized for its nature-based approach to shoreline management, reducing erosion and flood risks. The CVRD's Manager of Parks, Mark Harrison, says that collaboration was a major contributor to the success of the project.
I think one of the biggest successes was the partnerships, and specifically the partnership with Comox First Nation. So Comox has been involved with the project from the onset, and having their contributions and their inputs have been extremely valuable throughout the whole project. So having them there, making sure that all the archaeological and the cultural sensitivities of the site were respected, I thought was probably the most critical part of that whole project.
Another collaborator in the Dyke Road Park project is Project Watershed, a not-for-profit society based in the Comox Valley that does research and restoration work in coastal, estuarine, and freshwater systems throughout the North Island. Caitlin Perchelski is the executive director of Project Watershed and says the group's role in the project has been largely to inform the ecological restoration elements, while other partners took on different sides of the redesign.
So we focused on the foreshore and some of the riparian works, whereas some of the other folks were actually thinking of the functionality of the park from more of a social perspective. So they were thinking about things like making the parking lot greener, reducing the overall footprint of concrete on the site, making the social values of the park really shine. So they're rejuvenating the boardwalk, they're changing the bird viewing platform. So all of these things are going to make this space a really excellent place to get out and view the estuary and learn a little bit more about the culture and environment in our local setting. So it's overall a really cool project in that way.
Perchelski says climate adaptation work in this case meant highlighting Comox Road as vulnerable to coastal flooding and strategizing to buffer and protect the important transport corridor.
It's one of those really interesting areas where you can do work that's beneficial to the environment that also really benefits human infrastructure as well. So it's really a sort of co-benefit situation. So in the case of Dyke Road Park, we're building up the landscape adjacent to the road. So the road will be protected from higher water levels or storm surges. So if you see things like sea level rise or increased storm frequency, this will help protect the road. But the interesting part is we're also restoring the environment through this work. So it will also have benefits to things like salmon and birds and the environment overall, water quality. So we have sort of this mutual benefit between these two things where there's a human benefit and a benefit for the natural environment as well.
The CVRD's Manager of Long-Range Planning and Sustainability, Robin Holm, says that this award recognizes the forward-thinking nature of this major collaboration project.
It really recognizes all of the hard work that the entire team put into this project. It really was innovative in its approach and at times, you know, challenging to keep navigating the, you know, multiple project objectives. But I think that what we're seeing now is that with tackling climate change and building climate resiliency, we really need to be thinking outside the box. We need to be thinking about how we can ensure that there are a number of objectives that are being accomplished when we're taking on such a big project.
Holm says she hopes the success of this collaboration will set the standard for future projects.
There's been a number of really, I would say, good relationships that have been established through the project partners. There's been trust that's been established. There's been essentially a roadmap that's been created on how to tackle these multiple partner, multiple jurisdiction projects. And so looking to the future, I think we have a really good, you know, roadmap of how we would approach these. Again, we can look at this project, we can learn from those experiences and then be able to tackle new projects, greater complexity, with a better of understanding of how to work together.
Parks Manager Harrison says this recognition means a lot for this community of relatively small size.
The fact that we're getting recognized for this award and we're this small little community on Vancouver Island, when you think about the vastness of Canada, all the communities that are out there, all the amazing projects that are happening nationwide, for this small community to be recognized for this project at a national level is really quite something.
Harrison says on behalf of his colleagues at the CVRD and the large group of project partners,
we're really thankful for the recognition, and I think getting that recognition makes us feel like we're on the right path and we're moving forward in a good way.
Project Watersheds Director Perchalski looks forward to the impacts of the project.
I hope that people can really see the beauty that is the kind of convergence of all the different perspectives that we are being held by this project. So we have, you know, park and recreation space. We have ecological restoration. We have the Comox First Nation cultural values. All of these things are really being upheld by this project. And so I think when people are finally able to come out to this space and enjoy the park, they'll be able to see and sort of revel in the beauty that is the intersection of all of those things and how they really all uplift each other. And so I'm really excited for folks to get out to the site and be able to see that and enjoy it and just revel in the beauty that is the Comox Estuary.
Project completion and park reopening are slated for fall of this year. More information on the Dyke Road Park project and construction updates can be found on the CVRD website at comoxvalleyrd.ca/dykeroadpark. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This report, in partnership with CVOX, was made possible with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs program, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday, you heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. February 10th to 16th marks Sex Plus Week, so we headed over to Positive Living North in downtown Prince George to speak with Vibhusha Madanayake, Education Manager at Positive Living North in their Prince George office, one of three offices operating in northern BC, the other two being in Smithers and Fort St. John. Vibhusha speaks with us about the impact they hope to have with this week, which up until this year was known as Canada's Sexual Health Awareness Week. Positive Living North was originally established in 1992 as a healthcare resource primarily for those living with an HIV-positive diagnosis. That holds true today, and their services have expanded in a number of ways. We go to Vibhusha now, as she describes to us the importance of expanding the conversation around sexual health during Sex Plus Week. Previously, this week has been known as Canadian Sexual Health Awareness Week, and this year there's a rebranding. It's Sex Plus Week. What's the intention behind that rebranding, and is there a shift in priorities or in the direction of the week to an extent?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's mainly because we need to give the idea sexual health is not just for one week. It's everyday topic. So that's the idea. We need to go beyond the week. We need to talk about it every day because we know like more than 60,000 people living with HIV in Canada right now, across Canada, but this could be like increased, and we see it's not only HIV but also other sexually transmitted bloodborne infections are increasing, especially for example syphilis. Syphilis is on the rise in northern BC, so sometimes we think the only STI is HIV, but it is not. There are so many other diseases, and it can affect many lives, thousands of people's lives. So that's why we need to increase awareness about other diseases as well. So that's why we intend that we need to talk about sexual health every day. So we should go beyond the week, and also we need to increase awareness on healthy relationships, because we know there are so many gender-based violence, sexual violence, sexual exploitation, sex trafficking we hear every day from our communities. So consent and healthy boundaries, bodily autonomy, healthy relationships, these topics are very important. So that's why I think the biggest intention of having this Sex Plus Week is to increase awareness all around these topics. It's not just safe sex. And also we need to talk about prevention, because we know like we are spending a lot of money on treatment and medications. It is needed, but still, I think we need to have conversations around prevention, because then we can actually protect our communities and our families, friends from these diseases. So prevention is the key.
What are the dates on that? How long does it last for? What are you aiming to do?
So Sex Plus Week is the Canadian Sexual Health Awareness Week. So usually last few years we had for like 1 week, like mostly like 5 days. But this year we think like we need sexual health awareness, not just for 1 week, but for every day, because it's so important for everybody. So that's why we start this week from 10th February and we are going up till 16th February. More than a week. And as Positive Living North, we do different types of activities to increase awareness about sexual health, plus sexual health and inclusive healthcare services. So we have an event Thursday, February 13th at the Fire Pit Cultural Dropping Center on the 3rd Avenue in Prince George. We have an education booth, and Thursday very special because it's International Condom Day. So that's why we are actually doing this awareness event, especially people who are on the street, people who are unhoused, people who use substances, and the everyone and all the Prince George community. So we plan to do an education booth and also HIV bingo and romantic movie screening of our people. And also we are doing social media campaign the whole week. So we started it on Monday. Our main message was sexual health for everybody. And yesterday we talked about LGBTQ communities. And today we are talking about STIs, testing opportunities for our people, have especially if you know you are at high risk. There is a prevention medication called pre-exposure prophylaxis. So we are expecting to increase awareness on pre-exposure prophylaxis tomorrow, as well as post-exposure prophylaxis. That is another prevention medication medication for emergencies. So we're planning to increase awareness on these preventive medication options tomorrow. And also we will distribute condoms, safe sex tools, lubricants, those things at the site. People have opportunity to win gift cards and can get some fun. And also we offer free food. So at the fire pit we offer, like, every day we offer lunch for our patrons and community. So if you are in Prince George Thursday, February 13th, please join with us, because it's important to get education, increase awareness, and have some enjoyable moments with our team. So those are the different topics we are talking about. So that's the kind of advocacy we are doing this whole week. It's coming every year, like just before the Valentine's Day, because we think Valentine's Day could be very playful and energetic and active for our communities, because love means, like, romantic love or any kind of love is very important for our health and our life. It's kind of like self-care as well. So we actually encourage people to enjoy and have fun on that day, but be safe, because safe sex is so important. And yeah, it will be very fun, and also it will be very educative.
You touched on the expense of someone living with HIV. British Columbia actually does subsidize the medication to a significant extent, but not very many provinces have taken that lead on doing it. For someone who doesn't have any financial support dealing with HIV drugs and treatment, what kind of financial burden are they looking at?
A lot, I would say, because HIV treatment is very expensive. At the moment, the world is struggling, because we know with the new U.S. administration has cut freeze funds through USAID, because I know USAID and Center for Disease Control in the United States, they actually funded a lot of programs on HIV awareness and HIV treatment around the world. So at the moment, we know, like, we have to actually be in solidarity with all these communities. All the people who are living with HIV around the world, they are struggling because they cannot get treatment. And we know if you stop treatment, HIV can kill you, because untreated HIV can lead AIDS. So that is actually the biggest and the dangerous part of this disease, because your immune system will be, like, you know, destroyed by this syndrome part of the HIV virus, and you will be end with the AIDS syndrome. So that's the dangerous and riskier part of this disease. So I think if you do not have any kind of insurance, then it's a big financial burden. And, you know, with the high cost of living and other expenses you have in your life and family, health could be a really burden. And health is the most important aspect in everybody's life. So it's a huge amount of money, huge amount of cost. So that's why actually BC government and the community partners, in specifically in British Columbia, we try to increase the awareness on prevention, because prevention is better than cure, right? So it's very important to protect and have safe sex, especially, like, you know, if you are a high risk person at high risk of HIV, especially if you have a partner who is living with HIV, and if you are using multiple partners, and also if you are using drugs, using substances, because especially in Northern BC, injection drug use is the biggest cause of HIV infections. So if you know you are doing these practices, if you have this kind of lifestyle, it's better to have protected sex and always sterilize needles, so then it can protect you from these diseases, not only from HIV but also from other sexually transmitted infections. So then actually you can protect yourself, and that is very important at this time.
Not only are you a service provider, but you are a hub of resources and information that virtually anyone can access.
Exactly. So we have our website, and also we have a social media platforms on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn. So you can access our programs. You can actually get to know about our program services and also resources, especially for sexual health and Indigenous health and wellness. Please visit our websites and social media channels for more information.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.